I got a book in the mail from a man asking me to read the book and write something nice about it, or a call saying, hi, can I send you my book and can you read it and say something nice about it, which I did. That man was author and also firefighter, Chris Serb. Chris, you know how much I liked the book when I first read it. I reread it over the last couple of weeks. This is an amazing book. So you can be very proud.
Well, thank you, Rick. I appreciate it. And thank you also for the kind blurb that you contributed to the back cover. It's
I'm going to read it because having read it again, I say this doesn't even come close to catching how unbelievably good this book is. But I did write, here is the stunning, sad, important, and exciting story of a man all but forgotten. Chris Serb writes with such passion that he makes Walter Eckersall come alive on the pages of this remarkable book, making the athlete-turned-sports writer impossible to forget. Got no kidding, Chris. How did you first come upon this guy?
So I really stumbled upon this whole thing. It goes back about 25 years ago, so I'm in my late 20s, maybe 30 years old. I volunteered at a Special Olympics track meet at this place that I had never heard of, Eckersall Stadium. I'm a North Sider myself. This is on the far south side, 82nd Street in Yates. I'd never heard this name before. Eckersall, was he an alderman? Was he a judge?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Exactly, yeah. You know, so I remember thinking, I wonder who this guy is, and then I totally dropped the subject. And then maybe a few months later, maybe a year or two later, I stumbled across the man behind the name again. I picked up this anthology, The Best American Sports Writing of the 20th Century, and it was edited by the great David Halberstam.
And one
of the articles that Halberstam picked was a Saturday Evening Post article called Ecky. So I stole the title for my book, but it was an elegy, really, to Walter Eckersall, written by the great Ring Lardner.
Yeah, and there's so many things about this, Chris, where I stop and go, yes, amazing. You know, basically, Eckersall and Ring Lardner, arguably the most famous sports writer in the history of Chicago, they were colleagues at the Chicago Tribune for a time, weren't they? They must have overlapped a bit, yes?
They overlapped for about 10 years, yeah. Ecky spent his whole sports writing career, his entire career, which was 23 years, at the Tribune. Ring Lardner worked at a couple of other papers. He might have worked at the Inner Ocean, I think. I think 10 full years they were together at the Chicago Tribune, and they were colleagues, they were close friends, they were probably drinking buddies.
Drinking buddies.
I think led to both of their early deaths a little bit, but this article by Ring Lardner was just fascinating. It starts with his reminiscence about Eckersall as his close friend, as his fellow Chicago Tribune sports writer, and then he goes into a recounting of Ecky's remarkable athletic career, one of the all-time greats at both Hyde Park High School and then at University of Chicago. And I'm wondering, I've never heard of this guy. I was well versed in Chicago history and sports history, and this was all new to me. So I tried to find out more about him, and I really came up empty.
I think, Chris, at one point you must have thought early on, oh, I think I'll dig up the biography of this guy because there must be one, right?
Right. And there was exactly one, and it was very short. It was a self-published job written by really an amateur historian back in the 1950s, and that was it. So I thought someone really should write a book about this guy. And as the years went on, and nobody had, I kind of realized, maybe that someone is me.
Yeah. You've had a very interesting career. Since you're going to be on all the way till 6:30, and thank you for doing that. Talk to me about your where are you from? Are you born and raised North Sider or no?
Born and raised in Rogers Park. Lived in Rogers Park until I was about 40 years old. With a couple of stuff, went away for college.
Where?
Lived in Atlanta for a couple of years, but mostly I went to Holy Cross, small little Jesuit school for college, and then came back to Chicago. I lived in Atlanta for a couple years right out of college, and then came back to Chicago to go to grad school at Northwestern to go get my master's in journalism at Medill.
So you went to Medill. You're a Medill kid, huh? You're a Medill kid. What was it? What was it, Chris? What was it about growing up on the north side in, I'm assuming, Rogers Park, maybe, that made you want to get into the insane business of journalism?
I guess my mother was quite a writer back in her day, and she's still with us. Both my parents are still with us.
Oh, that's great. Good for you.
But, my mom, the old Daily News had this news lady competition every week, and you'd win like a $10 savings bond if they picked your article. And my mom was picked very, very often. She would just, she had a background as a writer, but I'm seventh of eight kids. She raised a very large family, so she was
busy.
Mom,
busy.
But, yes, very busy. But somehow she found the time for writing. So I guess I kind of followed in my mother's footsteps there.
Wow, that's great.
And the book is Mom and Dad are listening to this, listening to us right now. So the book actually is dedicated to Mom and Dad. So hi, Mom. Hi, Dad.
Well, hi, Mom. And I worked for the Daily News. My father and I both worked for the Daily News too. I don't know if we ever crossed paths there, but I'm pleased to know that. I'm pleased to know that because, as you well know, Mr. Serb, it was a great, great newspaper. You went. Did you like Medill?
I loved it. Yeah. I absolutely loved it. It was a great training ground for. And this is really. So I was there in 1994 to 1995. It really was kind of the dawn of the internet. So
yeah. We were kind of
a little bit. I had an English degree from Holy Cross, but I didn't really have much journalism training. I had a lot of writing, but it was more academic writing and a little bit of creative writing and stuff. So this it was kind of a harsh wake-up call to, you have to have your stories in by 5 o'clock. But these people aren't calling me back, you know, so learning how to develop sources and work the phones, and it was really, really good, really good training ground. So yeah, I did my master's at Medill, and while I was there, the Chicago Fire Department gave an entrance exam, and I thought, I'd always been kind of interested in that. I had been a Chicago lifeguard. I actually was a Chicago lifeguard part time while I was going to Medill too, and kind of one just led into the other. So I took the test, threw my hat in the ring, and then landed on the list, and then waited a few years, worked at a couple different magazines while I waited to get called.
Which ones? Which magazines?
I worked at the old North Shore magazine, which is now defunct.
Oh, my God. Asher Birnbaum was the editor?
Birnbaum. Yeah, Asher was my boss, and then Irene was the associate publisher, and then Jonathan, their son, was the managing editor at the time. So,
wow.
Yeah, really... And it was a small staff. I got a lot of experience both writing and editing there. It was a really it was a really good experience.
Yeah, and he was a very decent man too, Asher Birnbaum. I thought a very
good man. I think he only died like a year or two ago, and I think he lived to be close to 100. If I'm not mistaken,
he deserved that. If anybody deserves, I don't know if anybody deserves to live to be 100, but that's another thing. It's interesting you had that sort of backup career waiting. Was it disappointing? Because, God, Chris, journalism was a real mess. It's a mess now, too. Trying to get a career in journalism was pretty messy then, too. I mean, it was tough.
Right, it was. And it's funny that you mentioned this. I went in for my interview at North Shore Magazine. Something that that the youngsters won't experience. I found the ad in the Tribune's classified section. And, sent my resume in.
What's a classified? Email, yeah. But, what's a classified? Right. Yeah. Wow.
Right. But so Asher called and said, okay, can you come on in on Tuesday morning or whatever it was? Okay, sure. I'll be there and have my nice suit on and stuff. So we sat down and we talked a little bit, and then he handed me a spelling test. He actually gave me a spelling test, and he told me after he hired me, he said, you were the only one that got 100 on this test.
Absolutely it was worth yeah, that. Certainly worth the tuition at Medill. Holy cow, that's right. Fabulous. Right. That's fabulous. And so you worked there for a while and toyed with another magazine, and then just you decided, you know, it's an interesting option to opt out of journalism to become a firefighter. I mean, I think it's a very interesting. You're probably not the first person to do it, but it's an interesting career move.
It's definitely a little bit different.
Yeah.
And it's funny, when I joined the fire department, I took about a 25% pay cut. So North Shore paid, you know, kind of the industry average, but I went from there to American Hospital Association. Oh, had a family of magazines.
Sure.
So I went to their flagship magazine, which paid very well. It was trade journalism, and it was right in the heart of downtown Chicago, and I had just gotten a promotion when the fire department called, so it was a little bit of a difficult decision. I was 28, 29 years old at the time, and I thought, if I don't try this now, I will always regret it. So I took the pay cut, but then I also knew that I could keep working. You know,
You've created a really interesting balance here. I mean, you've written for a number of publications while working as a firefighter. Where were you stationed as a firefighter?
I was stationed my whole career as a firefighter at Engine 18, first on Roosevelt Road. It was then the oldest firehouse in Chicago, right across from St. Ignatius High School, which I heard you talking with Vincent about.
About their library.
I attended St. Ignatius myself, so that was kind of fun landing back where I had started. And so I spent 12 years there, and then I was spent a year teaching at the fire academy. Then I became a officer. I was a relief officer for several years, and then I was a captain at Engine 19 in Bronzeville, right around 35th and King Drive.
Yeah.
So yeah, most of my career was spent at, and now I've come full circle, I guess. I made battalion chief and was a relief battalion chief, and then I made deputy district chief. So I work out of Engine 18's house, my old firehouse.
Wow.
That's the one that they filmed Chicago Fire in.
Sure, sure.
Is the new house.
Sure. So, well, I admire you tremendously for that kind of career. I know a number of firefighters, a guy named Jack Hughes on the south side, and there was also another guy, I can't remember his name offhand, Chris, another guy who wrote a book, another firefighter who wrote a book. I think it was a novel. I cannot remember his name, but I'm certainly going to look it up. Was it difficult you sort of have been drawn to a lot of sports. I mean, you're the author of a book called War Football, World War One, and the Birth of the NFL, and also Sam's Boys. Talk to me about Sam's Boys, because my mother, who grew up much older than you in Rogers Park, knew this famous Sam. Talk to me about him for a second.
That's great. Yeah, so Sam Leone, I grew up, as I mentioned, I was a Chicago lifeguard.
Yeah.
But before that, I was a junior lifeguard. I started at Leone Beach, which is most people probably know it as Tule Beach.
Sure.
Or Loyola Beach stretches a little bit to the south there. But Sam Leone was kind of the patron saint of lifeguarding.
Oh.
I was born in 1970. Sam died in 1965, so there was no personal knowledge of him. But my mom's three brothers were all junior lifeguards at what was then Rogers Park Beach. My mom, there were no girls around, so my mom couldn't do the junior guard program.
Right.
But they talked about it. They spoke about Sam Leone with such reverence.
Oh.
He was this just larger than life figure. And we had like a big newspaper article, a Tribune article from 1950 about Sam Leone.
Oh, yeah.
It was kind of a joint celebration. Yeah, his 50th birthday as well as his 25th anniversary at the beach. So he kind of cast a big shadow over this place. But again, like with Ecke, now Ecke was nationally and even internationally famous in his day. Sam Leone, not quite so much, but
no.
Locally, you know, all of Chicago or all of the North Side.
No, I got to get a hold of that book. Chris is the deputy district chief for the Chicago Fire Department. Chris, let me ask you, I know your mom was a writer and a contributor to the Daily News. What did your dad do for a living?
My dad did a few different things. He was he worked at some trade magazines. He did kind of public relations. Did various things, and then he had his own little business where he was freelance for hire public relations and stuff. And when his clients started to dry up a little bit. This would have been sometime in the 1990s, I guess. He said, screw it, I'm going to go work at the local hardware store.
So Good for him. Good for him.
Probably 15 years working at Clark Devon Hardware up at the intersection between Rogers Park and Edgewater. Yeah.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm one of eight kids. There were six boys and two girls.
Wow. They must be awfully proud of you, because when you sent me your book and asked if I'd read it and give you a jacket blurb, I said, yeah, sure, because I'm a pushover. But I cannot tell you how amazing this book is. Can I ask, it's published by University of, what is it, Nebraska or someplace?
Yeah, University of Nebraska Press.
Getting a book published anywhere these days is really hard. Did you try any conventional publishers? Because I certainly think this book could have gone with one of the big boys.
I did not have an agent. I had an agent for my last book.
Yeah.
And I said, I'll try to go it alone. I did not try the big boys. I thought academic presses would be the right way to go, but the first place that I pitched it was University of Chicago Press, and they turned me down flat, which was kind of shocking.
It's not just shocking; it's disappointing to me. Well, the hell with it. It's been published. It's a beautiful package. Right. It's a beautiful cover. It's beautifully illustrated. All right, who was this guy? And we can answer some other time how nobody knows of him. What was this greatest, arguably the greatest early football player in the history of Chicago? What were his physical dimensions, Chris Serb?
So Ecky was a little guy. Walter Eckersall was he was a dominant high school football player. I think he said that he was 118 pounds when he was a freshman in high school.
Uh-huh.
He didn't make the varsity as a freshman, but he made it as a sophomore, junior, and senior, and was all Cook County League at the time. Chicago Public Schools system wasn't big enough to have its own league, so they had kind of Evanston High School in there, Oak Park High School, a couple of other close in suburbs were part of this league. But he was all league three times. He was 5'6". He had bulked up, according close to about 130 by the time he graduated. But he was still almost always the smallest person on the field.
Amazing, really amazing. And he was, there's so many interesting things in your book. But Newt Rockne was kind of beguiled by this guy, wasn't he?
He was. So Rockne, I don't know how much of this is true and how much is hyperbole, but
sure.
Rockne said that he was in the stands for Ecky's final high school game, which Rockne would have been just a year or two younger, so he would have been, I think Northwest Division was his high school, so it's plausible he could have taken a streetcar, but he lived in Logan Square. How did he get down
to
the University of Chicago's campus? A game, Eckersall's final high school game, they won. They beat a team from Brooklyn. It was the first ever intersectional high school game, and it was the absurd score of 105-0. So Rockne remembered, whether he was really there or whether he just heard the retelling, he just remembered Eckersall as this wizard on the field, calling perfect plays at the perfect times and all of that. And then Rockne claimed, again, how much is hyperbole, how much is true, to have been there for what was Walter Eckersall's greatest game, which was 120 years ago last week, when University of Chicago beat University of Michigan in a 2-0 thriller that was much more exciting than the low score sound. So, and Ecky had a couple of key plays in that game, and yeah, it was.
As you were, and I see from the back, you did a tremendous amount of research for this book. It must have been joyful and a little nutty for you to come across some of these things, because some of them seem almost virtually unreal.
Absolutely. And it's funny that you mentioned that. There was one legend about Walter Eckersall that I had to correct in the book. There's this legend that, Willie Heston was the other great football player in what's now known as the Big Ten. It was the Big Nine in their day because Ohio State hadn't joined yet. But Willie Heston was an all-everything player at University of Michigan. And in Ecke's freshman year, which would have been 1903, they handed Michigan handed Chicago their worst loss of Ecke's career. They lost 28-0. Michigan just pummeled them. But Eckersall went to tackle Heston in the open field, and Eckersall was usually a very good open field tackler. And so he went and he kind of lunged towards Willie Heston, and Willie Heston simply hurdled him. So the legend that was told is that Ecke missed the tackle, ended up on the ground, and then snapped up to his feet and then ran and caught him from behind. This was a story that was told by a guy who was in the stands, was this All-American, I believe, Hall of Fame football player named Al Exendine. He was from the Carlisle Indian School back in the day. And so he simply misremembered this play. It was a different guy from University of Chicago that came over and made the tackle. Ecke was fast, but he wasn't that fast.
Unbelievable, but Chris. Well, the other thing about this character, and I think it's I think I'm going to have to write about this for the Tribune too, since his ties to the Tribune were such. He helped. He was a flawed guy. I mean, he was. I don't want to get into that too much now. He was a very flawed guy. Beside a drinking problem, he had other character flaws. But he also was an incredibly inventive guy. The Silver Skates program, and in addition to that, he helped organize the Golden Gloves. Did he not?
He did. He certainly did. And it's he was one of the founders of Golden Gloves,
yeah,
if not the founder. The
right.
Record's a little bit sketchy on whether he was kind of co-developed it or whether it was his idea alone. The Tribune sports editor at the time was a guy named Frank Smith. They
sure.
may have collaborated to come up with the idea, but it's often misattributed to Arch Ward.
Right.
Arch Ward kind of helmed Golden Gloves for many years, but Ecke really, really got it started. And this was one of the things that the Tribune tasked him with was, hey, come up with some good athletic events, kind of come up with creating some sports news. Don't just cover the sports news. Come up with some things that we can cover that the Tribune can invest in. You know,
yes,
the Tribune has its own.
The key thing.
Yeah,
come up with some things that the Tribune can make some money on, as the Tribune.
Right.
Like the long, lengthy, money-grubbing history of the Tribune. Invent something we can make. I wrote about not long ago, a couple of years ago, about the history of the Golden Gloves, and didn't even come across his name. I'm sorry to say. What has been, Chris, the response to this book, not just from, I'm sure your parents are terribly proud, but from other people? It must be the same kind of wide-eyed wonder that I'm expressing, is it not? This is a hidden.
This is a hidden story.
He died. I think 1930 at maybe 46, 42 years old. That's part of the problem, that he didn't have a lengthy stay. But this is something. This is something that has all the qualities of some kind of, you know, Shakespeare writing about football, I think.
Right. I think one of the big reasons that Ecke was forgotten is one, that he died so young, but two, that University of Chicago dropped football. You know, they picked it up again 30 years later.
Yeah.
But yeah, your father was at University of Chicago probably during the dark ages when they were getting pummeled 70-0 by Michigan or whatever. You know, and then it was kind of a slow and at the end, I guess, merciful death.
Yeah,
that's having that history go away. Now everyone remembers Jay Berwanger from University of Chicago,
of course,
won that inaugural
because he won that first prize. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but nobody remembers Eckersall, and so that's part of why I set out on this, kind of to correct the right or wrong.
Did he have a family of sorts? I know he got married, and something happened to that. I didn't kill anybody, but something happened where he, you know, I don't know. Talk to me about his private life, if you could, for a minute.
Yeah, his private life was quite messy. He we talked a little bit. He had that drinking problem. He was expelled from University of Chicago. Expelled quite quite quietly. I think the university didn't want to make too big of a fuss of it. But he had no more PR value to the school after his athletic eligibility ran out, and he only had about a third of the required credits to graduate. He got caught stealing. This was kind of the last straw that led to the expulsion. He got caught stealing some clothes from a downtown tailor, and it was probably one of those things, you know, and we see this repeated in sports, you know, kind of a sense of entitlement.
Sure,
I can get away with this because I'm a superstar, but this tailor, I guess,
didn't like giving his clothes away. Yeah.
Right. His private life, I guess you would call it a shotgun wedding at the time. He got a young woman pregnant and then married her, and they had a baby 4 or 5 months later. But he abandoned his young family within a few months. I think the divorce was finalized in 1912, but they had been living apart for 3 years at the time. And, you know, he had a bit of a relationship with his daughter, but not, you know, at one time the ex-wife went to court to say, hey, he owes us this this back child support, this back alimony. So, he had a little bit of a relationship with the daughter, but probably nothing, you know, not a very close one, not a very, you know, he lived in Woodlawn himself for most of his life, Woodlawn and then South Shore, and then his ex-wife lived in Garfield Park, so that's not exactly easy to get from one to the other.
Well, he is one of the most sort of exciting and interesting characters in the history of this exciting and very interesting city. Again, the title is Ecke, E-C-K-I-E, Walter Eckersall and the Rise of Chicago Sports. It is about, you know, you read the early days about how crazy the high school system was here, too. Now, you have a family of your own, do you not, Chris?
I do, yes. I'm married. My wife, Emily, is a high school teacher at a suburban public high school, and I have two daughters, ages 12 and 10.
Do they 12 and 10, do they understand what Daddy does for a living? Not just being a firefighter, but being... It's harder to explain what it is being a writer, don't you think?
Yeah. My 10-year-old, my daughter Maggie, wants to be a writer herself. She practices a little bit, types out little stories and stuff. So that's kind of neat. That's kind of encouraging. You know, I have to remind her that it's not very lucrative, but you know what? She'll forge her own path, I suppose.
You must sometimes, you know, maybe late at night just before you go to sleep, you must say to yourself, wow, that you must consider yourself pretty lucky to be able to balance two great passions. Obviously, fighting fires is a passion of yours, and writing is a passion of yours. It's a pretty lucky juggling act, don't you think?
I definitely think so. Yeah. And I mentioned earlier the decision to join the fire department when I was taking that 25% pay cut, not ironically at a magazine that no longer even exists.
Right.
But, or if it exists, it's internet only or something like that. The one at American Hospital Association.
Sure.
But yeah, I've never regretted the decision for a second. It's allowed me to live a very full and very rich life.
And rewarding, you know, too. I mean, being a firefighter is giving back, whether you're putting out fires every single day, but you are giving back to society. Do you have another book on the horizon?
I think I do. I don't want to give away too much about it at the moment, but it's going to be more Chicago history for sure.
Well,
an untold story, really. So,
well, you're a very, very talented writer, and I will be in touch to further write about you and this book, because it's just the other thing about Ecke, how he was a kind of, you know, spokesman for black Americans and black sports people. He's just one of the most interesting people I've come across in nonfiction or in fiction, and that's a real credit to your research abilities and a real credit to your writing, too.
Well, thank you, Rick. Yeah, that was one of the most compelling things about Ecce, too. As you mentioned, for all of his flaws, his messy personal life, he really stood up for social justice for African Americans. That was, and that stems really from a high school friendship that he had.
Sure.
He had a black teammate
who
was lifelong friends with him, and he thought that Sam Ransom was the fellow's name, and he thought that Sam Ransom was a phenomenal athlete, but was denied opportunities that he had, and he thought that was an injustice that should be corrected. So that's the only real social political stance he ever took, but it was a very important
one.
A very popular one.
That's an awfully good one, Chris. It's a pleasure to meet you. It's a pleasure to read you, and it will be a pleasure for me to write about you too. So happy holidays! I'll be in touch before the holidays, but you got two. Those are good ages for little girls in Christmas time, man. Have fun, and best to your mom, an old Daily News pal of mine.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rick.
My pleasure. Take care.